Okay. Questions? Yes.
I asked about the practice structure. There's a question I asked about like relative feedback, and you're trying to calculate like the sum of the relative calculus, but you don't really. You just said like there's certain words with documents, but it wasn't very specific. Like it wasn't really like the term document matrix given.
I have to look at it. I mean, obviously there must have been an answer, otherwise, you know, I'm still a professor here, so if I give exams which have no answers, there would be repercussions. But I have to look at it. I can get back to you on that. Yes? Basically, yeah, that makes sense. Or you can always do normalizations. You can always put a plus one for everything. So that's another way. That's another way. Other questions? Yes. We will try, but it's not guaranteed. I'm only guaranteed to give you the solutions, which I did. But graded homework. I mean, first of all, it could have been. I mean, I think he's not done. So essentially, yeah, this is not working for me. So I'll have to get back to you on that question. And regarding the homework too, basically, it's probably not going to be available until next class. I think he's trying to grade, but it was impossible. So the problem with having homeworks and tests and trying to make some sort of a reasonable connection between them is already that even though I have discussed all the link analysis, I'm not going to have it on the exam just because I couldn't give you homework questions on them. Beyond that, I think giving also the homework returned back and then have an extra week, that would normally mean that I would also probably have to kill the social networks, parts of them. Okay, so that's why we decided that I will have the homework due on last Thursday and he'll try his best, but there are too many of you and, you know, he's trying to grade them. So if they are available, I'll ask him to send a mail. You can come and pick it up. Okay, but in general, that's not guaranteed. Yes?
Only half the answers were provided for homework.
Okay.
Which
there were some problems for which answers are missing?
Three was missing.
Okay, so some actually which I added, I should not, probably, I can, I'll make sure that I'll give you the answer for those. Okay, that's fine. Other questions? Yes?
On the authority and hope algorithm in the slides, when you normalize after each iteration, I noticed some normalization details were in a hidden slide.
Mm-hmm. No, all that normalization means is just make it a unit vector.
Right, okay.
That's all.
I was just wondering if there's a reason why that slide was hidden.
No, there was no real reason, I think. I mean, it's an obvious step,
yeah,
which is basically for any normalization just means make the vector unit vector. Okay. And in the page rank, you don't have to do normalization. because you are multiplying a transition matrix by a probability distribution. So you'll get another probability distribution. It's just by definition, okay? So you don't have to do anything separate for that. Although, in fact, as I said, if you actually realize that for the page rank computation, the probability distribution would just be the first eigenvector, and then if you called the MATLAB to find the eigenvector, because the matrix is small enough, you just get the eigenvector directly, it will give you a unit vector in that direction, which won't be a probability distribution, because unit vector only means that the Euclidean norm is 1. Okay, so they don't add up to 1. And in fact, there were problems, I had some slides where the probabilities didn't add up to 1. That was because I just called the MATLAB to find the, I have probably not changed it yet, but for the, this one, remember? Here I did not do the page rank computation in the hard way, which is basically, not hard way, this iterative way. Instead, since I knew the matrix, I just gave it to the MATLAB and asked for the eigenvector, okay? And it so happened that the primary eigenvector is 0.5774, all of them are 0.5774. Those don't add up to 1, but the squares of them added square root will be 1. That's because it's a unit vector. I should have just normalized it to, it doesn't matter. I could have taken this and divided all of them by the sum of the values, and then that would give you the probability distribution. In this case, it will be 0.333. Okay. Other question? Yeah. Probably open book means if I feel like it. After making the exam, if I think that it should be open book, it'll be open book. That's what. But I think in general, more or less in all the exams I ever gave, I just made it open book. But I should tell you that if you the exams are long. I gave you an example exam, and you can see that in 1 hour 15 minutes you're supposed to do that. So in 1 hour 15 minutes, either you probably have the time to do the problems or to flip the pages. Okay, so I think it'll be open book. Very high chance it'll be open book. If you depend on learning everything in the class, you're in trouble. If you just ignored some exam, some formula or something, that's one thing. But okay, other questions? Okay. So today's class, there's one other thing I was going to do before, the agenda for today's class is to do the trust rank, efficient computation of page rank, and then also the discussion that you guys are going to do of the page rank, of the Google old paper on Google. And the reason for that is both to sort of act as a review of everything that you have done, because a full search engine has to do everything, and then also to kind of take a critical look at it. One other thing that I should probably just go through quickly in the class is this. So I already mentioned this. You guys, to the extent you are interested in looking at it, you have looked at it. I'm just going to go through it quickly and see if there's anything that I should comment on. Not too many, things that I needed to worry about. I'm not quite sure how to interpret this. This seems to be one important one. Apparently, there is a general feeling that majority think that I'm talking too much, so today you get to talk. And then if you talk well, then for the rest of the semester you can talk. I don't have to talk. That's also fine. It's a reasonable point, and then we'll look at that. But anyway, this class was going to happen anyway. There will be other discussion sections, but this one was going to be a discussion anyway. Yeah. So we found out who these people are. So if you give me money, I'll tell you their name. But, you know, no, not really. We didn't. But I'm happy that some people feel that way. I have no clue who wrote what comments, except this one guy. You know, he has all the things, and he basically destroyed them, I'm sure. So no handwriting analysis is possible. Yeah, I think there's somebody who's doing this course audit. I wonder whether that is the person who also has a very low stress anxiety level. but otherwise, that's fine. All I can say, since we are on that page, I can say is that at the end, when people go out of my courses, the distribution of grades is no different for this course than it is for other grades. Other courses, okay, maybe more A's, but you have to actually survive up to that point, okay, in the sense that, and you know, it's a self-selection mechanism, so if you don't like the work that is involved, you know, vote with your feet, and which is fine. But in general, I don't get any badges for giving lower grades, lower number of A's and A pluses than any other person does. So however, it should be done at a certain level, such that, you know, irrespective of where you're taking the course, you get the same material. Okay, and I think another related point that is, you know, when I go back, I'll send you a mail that I got. Actually, it wasn't a mail to me, but it was a discussion. There used to be asu.cs.grad, which is a news group, many years back, where people would post and discuss. There was, I think, my first year here, there was a comment about a course that I taught, and I don't think it has changed. I've been here forever, and I'll send that to you. And it essentially said something similar to what somebody here was saying, which is that I'm spending as much time for this course as for the rest of the courses. But that's normal. That's what you should be doing. If we just do what we are paid to do, then I'm actually paid. If I don't teach this course and they get somebody else to teach the course, they basically give them $5,000. Okay, which for you it's a big money, but it's a very small money. Okay, so if I do $5,000 worth of work, that you guys probably would be happy, but that's not what I'm doing. Okay, and I think the same thing. You know, you are taking a course. Not all courses are created equal, okay? So I hope that you're taking all courses which require three or four courses worth of work for each of them. And grad students in particular have nothing to complain about. They have nothing else to do. You know, they only have three courses. Undergraduates, I feel sorry for them, but they are separately graded. As I told you, in the end, when the letter grades, when the numbers are converted into letter grades, undergrads are only compared to undergrads, okay? That's that. I don't think there's anything else that I can discuss that needs discussion here. Thanks for taking the time to write all this down. I'll go through this. But looks like we are in a reasonable shape otherwise. Okay. So that, yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so so here's the deal, right? I mean, there is only so many things that one can normalize for. In fact, you know, I had, my wife is a professor in the electrical engineering department. Some of you may even have taken her course in IEEE 120. But essentially, she doesn't like the fact that I even separate grad and grad students taking the same course, because they're all taking the same course and they should all be looked at the same way. I just assume that this is one thing where I know that the university essentially has the normal load expected is about six courses for undergraduates and three courses for graduate students. But beyond that, there are a huge number of personal variations. There are probably undergrad students who get enough money so they don't have to work outside. There are undergrad students who are probably working every waking second outside, you know, even if it involves ignoring classes. But I can't make up for that. And there may be grad students who have, you know, children and grandchildren, and those are more important to deal with I mean, even undergrad students, you know, who can have children and grandchildren, and they are more important to deal with than classes. So there's only so much we can normalize for. Okay, that's a reasonable point, but I can't do too much about that. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so what we're going to do is continue the discussion on trust rank, and then a couple of things about how you, what would be involved in computing the page rank more efficiently, sort of engineering issues, and then we'll open the floor for discussion of whatever you want to discuss. Okay. So if you remember last time, we were talking about the trust rank idea, where essentially you set the reset distribution to be dependent on some trust probabilities, a probability that is relevant, that's related to the trust. That's the probability that you would go to a page when you are bored is not uniform across all pages, but it's more for more trustworthy pages and less for less trustworthy pages. So if I have some way of quantifying my trust on all the pages, then all I need to do is the probability that I will go to this page when I'm bored is the trust of this page divided by the total trust of all the pages. That is a normalized probability distribution, right? Okay, and that's all you need to deal with. The question, of course, is how do you get these trust numbers for each of the pages? That's what we are going to discuss. And so basic idea, of course, is that you start with some seed pages, and then for which you consider they are supposed to be trustworthy, and then things that they are pointing to are somewhat trustworthy because they're being pointed to by trustworthy pages, and certain pages which are pointed to by multiple trustworthy pages are even more trustworthy, for example. That's the kind of idea that we want to deal with. So to do this, you need to propagate trust, and you know, you start with seed pages whose trust you know, and then you propagate this across the the connected link matrix, where you're assuming that a link is an endorsement, okay, and then you compute their trust values too, and then you get the overall trust values of a whole bunch of pages, and then you normalize it to get the probability that you would get to that page. And then that will then become part of the reset distribution, which computes the M star, right? And then you get a trust rank, which is essentially now likely to be more biased by the fact that some pages are more trustworthy than others. That's the idea. Okay. And the reason you think this might work is because you think that the trustworthy pages and untrustworthy pages are not exactly all mixed up. They tend to be slightly separated from each other. If they don't, then it doesn't help. If in fact every page trustworthy as well as untrustworthy page is pointing to both trustworthy as well as untrustworthy pages, okay, and the links are all indistinguishable, then trust rank doesn't make any sense, because propagation of trust would not make any sense, right? I mean, when we call our friends for, I need some help in getting this work done, and I have found that you guys had some work done, so can you tell me who you went with? And then if they just open the yellow pages and read up all the names in that, that's useless, because that means they're not endorsing anybody. Okay? Whereas if they said a couple of names that they actually had experience in working with, then that is endorsement. So that's an actual, that will give you trust missing. So your assumption is the trustworthy pages and the untrustworthy pages are loosely separated. Okay, so that there are more links between the trustworthy pages and more links between the untrustworthy pages. There may be occasional leakage, but otherwise they're separated. Okay, now, so this is basically what we're going to do and compute the trust rank. But before getting there, you can actually go back and talk about what are some of the issues involved in propagating trust in social networks. And here there are pages. Pages are linking to other pages. So the pages are making a sort of a social network. Okay. So what exactly what are the issues in trust propagation in social networks? This is basically the only slide I'll talk about, and then we can implement this in the context of link matrix. So trust is transitive, it's a reasonably transitive property, but you also assume that it attenuates as it traverses the network. Okay, so if I trust you and you trust somebody, then I probably trust that somebody, but not as much as I trust you. Okay. And then trust may not be symmetric. Just because I trust you doesn't mean you trust me. Okay? And then trust is normally additive, you know, it's in the sense that basically if you're being trusted from two different directions, then your trustworthiness tends to increase. Okay? And now also you can assume that it's additive in the sense that it's increasing not in square but just, you know, linearly. And then I also mentioned at the last class that distrust is difficult to propagate. In fact, it's very hard to tell what to do with distrust. Okay, you can see these are distrustworthy pages, and so we know that those are bad guys. But what else do we know? Okay, in fact, if you somehow think that bad guys only point to other bad guys, then maybe the distrustworthy pages, getting a link from a distrustworthy page makes you also distrustworthy. But that kind of defeats the whole purpose of distrustworthy. I mean, distrustworthy people, untrustworthy people probably will do things by pointing to all sorts of trustworthy people because they're doing an adversarial thing. Okay. In general, distrust, it's not clear as to what you should do to propagate them. So you can tell that this person, I mean, you know, you can say, I don't like this particular entity, but I don't know how to propagate that information. Whereas unlike that, trust, if I just tell you how much I propagated some number of entities in the network, then I can propagate that over the network to say how do I transitively trust other things in the network. It's a useful thing to be able to propagate trust. Okay. Now, one other word that you would have heard of when you're talking about trust is trust and reputation. Okay. So one reasonable way to think about the distinction is trust can be user specific. Just because I trust you doesn't mean the world trusts you. Okay? Reputation is an aggregated trust measure. So if lots and lots of people trust you, then you have a high reputation. That may still mean that I don't necessarily trust you. Do you understand what I'm saying? So think of the distinction between trust versus reputation as the distinction between user-specific importance measure versus user-independent importance measure. Okay. So like a page rank is supposed to, this is an important page. Well, is it just for my query, for me, or for just the rest, entire world in general? Normally, if you do one page rank, which is topic-independent and user-independent, then it's just general importance. That means I may actually not like that page at all. Okay, but to the extent a lot of different individual users wind up liking a particular page, its importance, aggregated importance measure increases. Okay, so think of reputation essentially as how many people seem to trust this page. Okay, one idea is of course that in fact I might actually say, If I start propagating trust where individual seed pages that are identified as trustworthy pages are marked by different sets of users, different users. Okay, that means basically for each page, really, if you are serious, and if there are 10 users, then here is A, B, C, D, and then B propagates E, and so on. Now, if there are 10 users, you need for each of these pages 10 trust measures corresponding to how much each of the users trust this site. If you think they're all essentially indistinguishable, 10 users are just 10 copies of the same user, then you can assume that all the trusts are combined together. Okay? In which case, there is no difference between trust and reputation. Basically, you are taking one measure that is user independent and are propagating this. Okay, so reputation also can be propagated the same way trust is propagated. It's just an aggregate measure, but it also can be propagated the same way. If you start with reputation values for the original seed set, you can propagate the reputation values. Okay, but disreputation cannot be propagated for the same reasons distrust cannot be. And there are people who have considered all sorts of different ways of propagating trust and distrust measures, combining them and trying to see if there is a way of actually seeing whether they will agree. Any of these distrust and trust approaches would agree with ground truth. Okay. Now, obviously, those of you who have been dealing with Amazon and especially eBay, right, where trust and distrust of the individual sellers and buyers are extremely important quantities, right? So one of the things is, in fact, I'll send you a link to a paper which took the information from either eBay or one of these auction sites, okay, as to the aggregated trust metrics of the users. And then it essentially, what it does, what they did was they considered, you know, zeroing out some of the values of the trust and distrust for the various users, and then trying to complete them by propagating the trust from the other entities, and then seeing how much the propagated values differ from the actual value as was measured by users. Right, that's one way you can compare essentially the ground truth to the different ways of propagating trust. There is one paper where they actually considered 83 different measures, different ways of combining trust and distrust. Okay, so kind of at that point it becomes quite a grab bag of, you know, here is this technique, here is this technique. But the point I'm trying to make is there are multiple combinations and nobody really knows what's the exact ways, other than the points I made here, which are reasonably non-controversial. Distrust doesn't propagate, doesn't know. We don't know whether it propagates or not. Trust definitely does. Okay. So this is one simple way of propagating trust, and it's just one of the possibly 83 different methods that that other paper talks about. I will send, I think it's already linked in the trust rank area of the reading list. So what basically we're talking about is trust should be attenuated as you go, you know, from point to point, then it's getting attenuated by some damping factor. And the damping factor beta is less than one, that's it. How much attenuated, you decide. You know, it's just a simple decision. I mean, it's a input factor that you're going to give, okay? So if this guy has trust one and this node is pointing to two, then basically from this node two gets a trust of beta, because one times beta, okay? And by this guy, you would get, three will be getting beta squared, because this guy only has a trust of beta that he can give away, and then beta square, beta times that will be beta squared, that's it. And then trust splitting, if you trust too many people, you can say, I mean, again, these are all questions, so this beta, should you actually believe that trust gets damped, and how much does it get damped? We can argue on that, okay? But generally, nobody disagrees that trust will get damped as you propagate, okay? People may differ as to how much it gets damped. The other interesting question is, if I am trustworthy and then I am making endorsements to a huge number of people, then all of them are getting my trustworthiness, or only getting one over my trustworthiness? Okay, it's a tricky question. I mean, in fact, you can argue both ways. Okay, I normally tell the Einstein reference letter story at some point of time during the course, so I can tell it this time, right now. So if you're a physics student in early 30s, 40s, right, and if you got a reference letter from Einstein when you apply for jobs, would you be happy? Saying, you know, this guy will give a nice letter saying, you know, hire this person, he or she is the best thing since sliced bread, okay? You would assume that this should really improve your career. But apparently Einstein was such a nice guy that anybody who asked him, he would give him a letter. And he would say the same exact thing to everybody, you know, that they are, you know, greatest since sliced bread. And so everybody in the know, which is other physics department chairs and so on, would, you know, get all the reference letters, first remove the Einstein's letter and read the rest, because it just basically doesn't make any sense. You know, it gives the same exact thing. So I could use this either as IDF example, because it has very high importance, but since he's giving it to everybody, inverse document frequency is zero, you know, if everybody is getting it. In this particular case, I can also use it as Einstein essentially watered down his trustworthiness by endorsing too many people. That's another example, right? But if he endorses two people, then it's not reasonable to say that each of them become only half as trustworthy as Einstein, okay? But we just, you know, basically in this propagation method, we just assume that if you endorse N, then you get 1 over N. You basically give away your trust to 1 over N to each of them. Now, notice that the same sort of thing happened in the page rank computation. But that, you know, like, you know, if a page has two links, then you took each of the links with half probability. But here, the page has one trustworthiness, one unit of trustworthiness, and it has two links, then it gives away, it basically endorses each of them half at a time. Okay, and just because it's being split here, there, in fact, it's much simpler. The assumption is that a random surfer will randomly pick one of the links. Here, you are making assumptions on how your endorsement gets diluted when you do it to too many people. So, in fact, an equally reasonable cross-propagation metric would be to say that if you endorse less than k people, then all of them will get your trust. If you endorse more than k people, then they'll get 1 over k. That's a reasonable thing too. That means where k is some sort of a magic threshold. So you start giving, more than 100 letters of reference, then none of them matter. But if you give less than 100 letters, then each of them are trusted. Just as. So that's, again, one of the 83 different methods of propagating trust that you can differentiate. But this is the one we'll use right now for, talking about trust rank. And so if you combine this with that beta thing, then you essentially have splitting and attenuation, right? So this guy really gets, beta by 2 and beta by 2. And then from this side, you'll get the 3, so beta by 3, beta by 3, beta by 3. And then the third part, of course, is trust gets combined additively. So what this guy gets is 1 over 2 plus 1 over 3. And if there is also beta, then beta by 2 plus beta by 3. Okay, simple. And you just propagate it one way. Okay? Now, the question, of course, is for this to work, you need a seed set. You need to have some number of nodes for which you know the trustworthiness so that you can start propagating it. Okay? Now, there is this worry that if there are cycles, you can increase your trustworthiness. But the damping, at least, there are possible cycles and you can't stop it. Okay? But the damping at least makes sure that you won't become infinitely trustworthy. Right? Because when you give back trust to somebody who is pointing to you, you're only giving beta square. And then when they give it back to you, they are giving beta cube and so on, beta being less than 1. Okay, so we don't particularly care about how to deal with the cycles and so on. If there are cycles, they will just somehow get damped out slowly. Okay, so the big question is, how do you get seed set? One idea is that you show a bunch of pages to the user from the web and say, look, which one of these will you trust? And it's a focus group user, so that they're all standing in for all of you guys. This focus group is standing in for all of you guys. And then they'll say, yeah, we trust these, we don't trust these. And then you can start from that seed set and propagate the trust propagate the trust across the other pages. And once you propagate them, then you can get the reset matrix, right? The problem, of course, is that this is obviously problematic. How many pages are people going to look at and say these are trustworthy, these are not trustworthy? And if you have too small a seed set, then trust will just get attenuated, and at some point of time, you're not getting a good, if there are some pages that were individually trustworthy, but you never asked a human to show, see whether or not it's trustworthy, so you did, nobody gave it a rank, so they'll get 0 to begin with. And they may slowly get their trustworthiness back because of propagation, but it will never be as high as 1, right? So what you can do is basically this paper, which talked about trust rank, talks about a couple of ideas. One is pick high page rank pages and then show them to the users and ask them, do you trust these? Okay, and then basically make them the trust seed and then propagate trust on them. And then use them back in the page rank computation, except now it will be a biased page rank computation based on trust. Okay. The other one, of course, if I had another idea would be that you actually, instead of page rank, what I really should do is get the best hub pages. If I was doing authorities hubs on the entire web anyway, then I could get the best hub pages because those are the ones that are actually pointing to lots of people. And then ask the users, do you trust this hub? Do you trust this hub? And that will be fewer questions about relevance judgment. Okay, but unfortunately, as we looked at, this requires that you have done actually authoritative hub computation on the entire web, apart from page rank computation, which is kind of unlikely. Okay, if you do a normal page rank computation, you could take the top k pages, but you know that this is what you really want to do, and you are approximating it with page rank. Okay, and then there is this other idea which that paper talks about. This is what I mentioned in the beginning of last class, called inverse page rank, which is essentially trying to approximate hub computation using page rank computation. Okay, so where you essentially reverse the link direction and compute the page ranks. And whatever now would be the highest page rank pages would be essentially the most important hub pages, equivalent. Not exactly, but sort of approximately. And then take a few of the top one of those and then show them to the users and say, do you like to trust them or not? And then use that as a seed. Okay. Either way, you are essentially you're combining trust and page importance measure. Okay. But using the same links. Okay. In one case, links are being used as a citation and deciding the stationary probability that a random surfer would find themselves on that page. In the other case, you are using the same links to mean I'm endorsing that page and computing the trust propagated from that. Okay. So that's the end of my discussions of the page rank variations. I talked about topic specific. I talked about this. This is more interesting because we also talked about propagating trust on the social network. And then I also mentioned recency-based page rank, which essentially gives higher preference to new pages when it jumps to during the reset distribution, rather than consider that every page is equally likely to be picked. It gives a slightly higher probability to the pages that are new. So that means that other than the link structure, apart from the link structure, you also need to have some information about recency. Okay, you can't just assume that pages with zero few links are recent, right? Because they could have been around from God knows when, but nobody likes them, so nobody puts a link to them. So this is not affirmative action for unpopular pages. It's affirmative action for recently generated pages which didn't yet have enough links because nobody looked at them. So you change the reset distribution such that they once in a while get seen. Okay, yes. Up to you. Again, one thing, this is also connected to the discussions that you guys will be doing, and I looked at some of the comments that were posted on the blog. Many of these techniques, there is variations that you can consider. It's not like what did the God say, clearly if you want to consider update, if the page changed and you want to consider that, that's up to you. Okay, the important thing is previously we didn't care about anything about when the page was created. We only cared about how many things are citing that page. And we know that citations increase as the page becomes older and older. Right, so that's what you're making up for by taking the recency into account. And so how to define recency, one idea is to just see when it came into being. Another idea is if there was a big change in the page, then you can consider it to be a recent page. It's up to you. Okay. But in general, I think it's better if you change the page completely than you just change the URL for the page. Because from a marketing point of view, it's a dumb idea to say that I'm Coca-Cola, but now onwards I'm selling only burgers. Right? So I should be seen as the best, hamburger site, That doesn't make sense because you have to tell everybody who thinks you'll be selling Coke that you're actually selling burgers. Instead, you change the site name. That will be better. Okay, from your point of view, that is from the individual pages point of view. Yes.
I want to
link
something what we discussed in social network analysis.
Yeah.
In social network analysis, we clustered the labels in the graph into different categories. But right now, we are saying that we can't, quantify trust exactly. So are we saying that in most of the networks today, we are talking only about good relationships and
Well, no, that's the interesting thing, because see, a normal social network, first of all, we are talking about social networks in Link Matrix. That's why I put the social network discussion there. Okay. The real question, of course, is, and in a normal social network, there could be different edges of different kinds, each edge is a different type of relationship between the pages. Okay. The question is, of course, you can do more interesting things with that, but the question is, how often do you actually have different kinds of links? Even in social networks, people basically, there may be labels with the link, and you can analyze the label and convert it into different kinds of networks. Okay, it's more a question of trying to get by with what you have in front of you. Links basically are available. Okay, in fact, if somebody were to look at the link structure of the web and look at sentiment, okay, sentiment mining, there is this whole area which we'll talk about when we get into text extraction. We will talk about, if somebody writes a review of a hotel and they didn't put stars, 3 stars or 4 stars, can you read that without understanding what it's saying in English? Can you guess whether they're trying to say it's good or they're saying it's bad? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's not completely understanding the English, just saying, is it good or is it bad? It's called sentiment mining, right? Now, if to the extent we have sentiment mining tools, which is basically based on text extraction techniques, you could apply them to the link matrix itself, because after all, originally links were just generated, you just took the links between the pages and just ignored the sentiment on them. Okay, but now you can see actually whether when they put that endorsement, did they say good things or bad things around it? What's the sentiment of the link? And if it's plus, put plus one. If it is minus, put minus one. And then you have a different kind of a more richer social network structure. The question is, doing that is harder. The problem is doing that is harder, and nobody is doing it right now. Okay, but it's clearly, for small networks, it's what you could do that, if you should. And the technology is available right now. But again, as I said, many things, if I'm a company, all I need to do is to make sure that I'm doing way better than my competitors, and not necessarily to solve the problem, and so there may not be any major reason. Okay. Other questions? Okay. So that's about the cross propagation. A couple of things about page rank computation. Basically, we said we multiply matrix by a vector and then get a new vector, a vector of probability distribution, which is the probability, stationary probability estimate for each of the nodes in the link matrix. And then you multiply that by the transition matrix, you get a new vector, and then you again multiply it until you get a new vector and so on, until it doesn't change between two iterations. And not changing between two iterations is easy enough to check. Basically, you see the maximum difference between any two probabilities, any two corresponding probabilities in the same vector. And when that becomes less than epsilon, where epsilon is a pre-specified threshold, you can say, I've not changed anymore. Okay. The question, of course, is if you have, the matrix is web scale matrix, so in the sense the transition matrix might actually be 8 billion by 8 billion. So what can you do to actually do it fast? Okay. Even though this is being done offline, because you're doing page rank one, not for each query, but just once, every once in a while, okay? Still, it could take a long time, right? And so what can you do to improve the speed? Here are a couple of points that you can keep in mind. One, and this is basically, this discussion is based on a paper called Efficient Computation of Page Rank, which is also linked from the reading, okay? So what you could do essentially is, before you even start doing page rank computation, they suggest the following, this guy suggests the following thing, which is remove the dangling nodes. Dangling nodes are the nodes which are not pointing to any other nodes. Okay. Remove the dangling nodes, and then when you remove all the dangling nodes in the current graph, then there may be other nodes which now suddenly became dangling. Remove them too. Right? Okay. And then this way you can cut down all the dangling nodes. Okay? Now, at that point, whatever is the graph you have, that is a smaller graph, start doing page rank computation on that. To get you a feel for how much of a change you can get, So they basically, on the Stanford web base, which was, you know, a large group of crawled pages with link structure, they had 25 million pages, and there were 81 million URLs in the link graph to begin with. Okay, so 81 million links essentially. And then after two pruning iterations, that means remove all the dangling nodes once, and then again remove all the dangling nodes. Okay, they get to 19 million nodes. That's not bad, right? So 6 million were dangling to begin with, are dangling after the original dangling nodes are removed. Now here's my question, what happens to these nodes that are removed? Can we just ignore them? When we remove the dangling nodes, are we removing the least important or the most important nodes? What? I mean, PageRank, really, authorities are the only thing, right? So when we are removing dangling nodes, we are removing the truly important nodes. So nobody is saying that just after you remove them, ignore them. They're saying you bring them back later. So the idea essentially is, anyway, dangling nodes always create trouble for us. Remember, this was the dangling nodes which would make the graph basically, these are the sink nodes. We used to call them sink nodes before. Okay? When you remove the dangling nodes, there won't be any sink nodes. So you don't need to do that sink node approximate as a sink node repair. Right? The one point, of course, is suppose you have a densely connected network, and then there is a point to this guy, there's a point to this guy, there's a point to this guy, and so on. All I'm saying is remove these guys, compute the page rank within this, and then I can compute the page rank for these. Suppose there are like two pointers to this. Okay? If I know the page rank of this this page P100 and this page P250, which are the probabilities. So this is the probability of P100, this is the probability of P250, and I know that there is a link from them. And if this guy actually has two links, then there's a half a probability that you would come here. This probability times half plus this probability times, if there are three links, one third would be this guy's probability. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you do bring them back, and they won't have exactly the same page rank, but it'll be good enough. Okay? That's what they meant by getting rid of them. Okay? Because they, in essence, are not really, I mean, other than by this additional thing that we did, which is saying there are no sync nodes, so make everybody, if you come here, you will reset yourself to someplace here, is what we did previously. So they're not really changing these guys' values. Because reset distribution is there anyway in the page rank computation. Okay? So what I could do is ignore this, compute the page rank for just this piece, and then recompute these, thinking they would not, they're small enough that they won't be affecting the page rank values here. Is that clear? Okay? So that's what we would, that's what is supposed to be done. And now so that would be your page rank matrix. And then you do, and now there are no more sync nodes because of, you know, if you do this iteration until fixed point, there won't be any more sync nodes. If you stop after some iterations, there may still be sync nodes, in which case you have to do both the probability, you know, both making sure that the any 0000 column becomes 1/n, 1/n, 1/n column. Plus, anyway, you have the reset matrix, which depending on whether you're doing normal page rank or topic specific page rank or trust page rank would be different reset matrices. Okay, so this is a big difference. It reduces the size, but even in the old days, it was 19 million nodes. Now it will be a couple of billion nodes. Okay? So the question then is, what happens, of course, is that this matrix won't fit in the memory, and so it will be sitting on the disk, and then anytime you keep going to the disk, you essentially, if you have non-local accesses to the disk, you can do very badly. Okay, so the simple idea is to just multiply this matrix by this source. So you need, at the minimum, you need one vector of size, the number of nodes on the graph, another vector of size, again, the number of nodes on the graph, and a matrix of size, number of nodes per number of nodes. Right? That's the minimum. Okay, we'll find a way in which we don't even need two of these. We can just get by with one. You can do in-place computation of page rank. Okay? That we'll talk about in a minute. But for now, let's think in this way. destination is link matrix by source vector. Okay. So you can just do column by, you know, this row by this column, next row by this column, next row by that column, and so on. That's what your computation is going to be. The problem, of course, is this whole matrix is too big to fit in the memory, and so you're likely to go to the disk many, many times, and non-local accesses. So the question is, how do you localize the access? So this basically is talking about the kind of the fact that random access pattern is likely to be the entire working set, which means you're likely to thrash, okay, going back and forth to the disk. So the other idea is to split the link matrix such that you somehow put a piece of it in the memory at a time and do all the computations with respect to that, and then page it out, get another part in, do the computation again. Okay. I'm sorry, this one I think is in the auto slide mode, we'll get through this. Okay, so in this particular case, all I want to do is somehow split the destination and source into B blocks. Okay, in each block, you essentially have nodes 1 to 100 here, 101 to 200 here, and so on, let's say. Depending on, you know, the bigger the memory, the more this can be. It can be 1 to 1 million, and 1 million to 1 million to 2 million, and so on. Okay. Now the question, of course, is you also need to do something to the matrix. If the entire matrix is being working on each of these, it doesn't help. So how do you split the matrix? This is similar to the idea that we talked about previously. Essentially, you split the link matrix such that each matrix, each of the blocks would essentially have all the source nodes, but only show the destinations in a certain range. Okay. So here is the first bucket, and this is the second bucket, this is the third bucket. The first bucket contains only nodes 0 to 31. That means it only needs to show links ending in 0 to 31. They can be coming from anywhere, from 1 to 1 gazillion billion. But so in each of these blocks, you have this column basically are all the possible nodes, so 0, 1, 2, etc., all the way to 8 billion. Okay. But now if, for example, from 0 page, you have links to 12, 26, 58, and 94, you split them into 12 and 26 only here, 58 here and 94 here. So you have some redundancy because you are copying this column multiple times. But the advantage of this is that when you are, remember that you essentially have a block whose page rank is being computed only by this matrix, by multiplying only with this matrix. Okay? And this will give all the information you need. So that's a reasonable idea. It's not particularly, you know, earth-shaking. But on the other hand, if you don't do this, then you will have non-local disk access pattern, and it can actually kill you in terms of the time taken. So they show a picture here. It depends on how much of a physical memory you have, right? If you have enough physical memory to support everything, you know, if you can hold the entire link matrix, then doing this kind of an idea is a waste of time. It actually worsens the performance. But if the physical memory is small, then this does make a big difference. Okay, so they considered in this particular case, you know, a machine with 256 megabyte memory is extremely hard to get these days, but at the time when this paper was written, it was available, and the 64 and even 32 megabytes. Okay, and you notice that, and then these are basically, one of them is naive, that means just one block. This one is two blocks, this one is four blocks. You can increase the number of blocks you split into. Okay. And so when you have 256 megabytes, the difference basically is actually the opposite in this case, okay? Because as the number of blocks increase, it basically turned out that it almost fit for him in their example, the entire matrix fit in the memory. And so by splitting it multiple times, you increase the cost. Whereas by the time you came to 32 megabytes, it actually is significantly smaller compared to the naive method. Now this is a good study because in essence, irrespective of whatever your main memory is, the link matrix is much larger than that. And so it's basically showing that you can get huge improvements in performance by just blocking them. The only important thing you want to know is the block is with respect to the destination. So sources are always same, and you are blocking into different buckets of destinations into different matrices. Cute idea. Okay? One last thing, actually one more piece of improvement for page rank computation is essentially to realize that you don't need both a source and a destination vector. Why did we have this? Because we originally said source is the zeroth iteration probability distribution and the destination is the first iteration probability distribution. And then destination becomes the source for the next level and then source will be overwritten in the next iteration. It was as if you must get everybody's ith iteration values before you compute their I plus 1 iteration values. But if you think a little bit, it should not be surprising that in fact, A, you can just overwrite the new values into the existing cell. And B, doing this is faster. Doing this is faster. Why? Because you are going to be, so in this particular case, what's happening is that up to certain node, you are taking their k plus 1th iteration values. Because these are the ones whose page ranks have already been computed by the time, I mean, the current iteration page rank values have already been computed. And after that, you are computing their previous values. Doing this actually increases the rate of convergence of the page rank computation. Because at least some of them are already close to their real page rank values. Okay? For those of you who know anything about Markov division processes and value functions, some of you may have done 471, there was this idea called prioritized sweeping, and that's exactly what this is. Basically, you don't need this, even though conceptually it is nice to think in terms of iteration 1, iteration 2, iteration 3, and so on, you don't really need to differentiate like that. And in fact, you're better off overwriting into the same exact matrix. Okay, and so this one actually is showing that the convergence is faster this way. Okay, again, you shouldn't be surprised because if your neighbors, think about this guy, right? If you don't understand that, think about this guy. In the beginning, in the ith iteration where I equal to 0, all of these had some numbers, which is like 1 over n. Now, if you computed these guys' page ranks, they would have been more or less the same. If after like 1 million iterations, then if you computed their page ranks, then these guys' page ranks have already corrected themselves. They have fixed point, they have reached a fixed point, so these numbers will be actually closer to their real value. What that means is, to the extent your neighbors know what their page rank is, then your estimate of your page rank is better. And what this approach is saying is, if half of your neighbors are clueless, other half are still have a clue, you know, don't make everybody be clueless just so that it'll be uniform. You know, take the clue, you know, people who actually know what their better estimates are, and take the other guys whatever their old estimates are. And this makes a difference in terms of the convergence, which means, you know, how many iterations are needed, how many multiplications are needed before the page rank matrix, before the probability distribution doesn't change anymore between iterations. Okay, these are some of the first order ideas of improving the computation of page rank on large matrices. There are many other ideas. In fact, there are other things such as, for example, it turns out that the eigen gap matters as to how fast the matrix is going to converge by power iteration is determined by eigen gap, which is the distance between the primary and secondary eigenvectors. Okay, so if your current matrix is such that the lambda 1 minus lambda 2 is too close to 0, you can condition it, change it in certain ways such that the lambda 1 minus the gap would increase. That would also improve the convergence. Now you can say, whenever I change the link structure, whenever I play with these kinds of things, am I not changing what would be the true importance measure? Yes, but we know that even if you actually run the page rank computation correctly, you're not getting anything about page true importance. Right? It's just a computation. So what matters is that it's sort of related to the link structure and it's reasonably stable. This is why it made sense to get rid of the dangling links and recompute their values after these guys' values are known. Right? That will be much cheaper because they wouldn't have taken part in this multiplication every time. But if you did keep them as part of the matrix, then in fact the exact page ranks each of these nodes will get would be different from what you are getting now. Right? But that's the price you pay. But the point is that really it doesn't matter that much because these numbers are, what's important is that these numbers are stable, not that they're correct, because there's no correct number. And there was another place, by the way, just to kind of connect across different points, there's another place we did something like this, LSI, latent semantic indexing, where you could either put the query along with the documents and compute the latent semantic, and compute the factor matrix, or assume that one query isn't going to change the decomposition enough. So you just use the existing decomposition to compute the query separate, translate the query later. Now obviously these two will give slightly different answers. I can make pathological examples where the ranking would change. But the point is, it's a small enough probability, and B, anyway, this whole thing is really trying to capture the user relevance, which we have no clue about. Okay, I mean, it looks like defeatist, right, but on the other hand, welcome to the world, of IR, which is we are trying to optimize with respect to a metric that's not well defined. Basically, it's in the user's head. Okay. So, unfortunately, we took a long time, but let's actually start talking a little about what you want to say about the page rank thing. First of all, before you leave, all of you have to give me your one page write-ups. And then we will continue this discussion as needed in the next Tuesday's class, too. If there are enough things that are going to be said. So are there things that people wanted that jumped out at you? I mean, what I wanted to do is to make sure that you actually read that paper end to end, and you prove that by giving me your write-up before you leave. Okay. Yes. Yes. No, that's so the billions were more interesting. Okay, so this paper, one of the interesting things about this paper was this was written when they were grad students. And they had idealistic motives such as we must make sure that the academic researchers have access to what search engines are doing. But then Kleiner Perkins, which is a venture capital firm, said, are you crazy? Why don't you want to start a company? And they said, yeah, that looks fine too. And in fact, we should talk more about the technical aspects, but all companies, they made this claim, so we get to yell at them. But Google also made the claim that do no evil, okay, except they have gone into all sorts of countries which have all sorts of censorship, and they said whatever you say. Okay, so it's a company first. Good food, but a company first. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's a company, so we don't expect more from them. I mean, they did make these interesting claims, so, but I think Alta Vista wrote papers too, and the people from Alta Vista, which was a search engine much before Google, wrote papers, but they didn't say that they're doing it to help the academic, I think.
So instead of just saying, I have a 32-bit integer, I'm going to throw integer, and allow that to explode in terms of this storage, they actually encoded these results, and they designed their system in a way big that you have to do, you know, massive optimization, but they optimize it on a level that had never before been done.
So the only question is, this is actually a very interesting point. I would say that as grad students who didn't have access to too many, I mean, there is this anecdotal evidence that they essentially had to go to various labs and take their old machines to make something like a cluster. Okay, one worry about optimization at that level is, suppose you were a programmer who knew how to write highly optimized assembly language programs for the old, nobody needs more than 680 kilobytes of memory kind of computer. You are extremely good at it, but you're useless right now because the world has moved on. They have a lot more memory. They have a lot more space. So it's a useful thing to do for that time and that particular, you know, this thing. So optimization is important, but certain aspects of it is still questionable as to. Python, yes, but C, C++, yeah.
But the point is, I mean, you can still achieve these kind of optimizations in any kind of program, but it's something that programmers don't normally think about. If you're declaring an integer to count from 0 to 10 in a loop, and the integer range is from negative 2 million to 2 million, instead you declare a byte. 0 to 28, you're using less storage, which allows your computer to process faster. I mean, by doing things like that,
so again, this should be other people also. I mean, it's not you convincing me. So are there other opinions on that, or are there other points? It's a reasonable point. Yes. Well, to some extent, the way they actually do normalization is in a weird way. For example, beyond 4096 hits, right, they'll just reduce it and they'll say it doesn't change anymore. Okay. By the way, which reminds me, and several people made this point on the blog, so do they or do they not use IDF numbers, at least directly or indirectly? Why do they use IDF numbers, according to this paper? I mean, look, by the way, this is the 98 paper. It has no connection whatsoever to what has come to be known as the Google search engine right now. So in fact, I have not, part of the reason I made you read that is mostly as a good review of all the techniques being put together into one engine, right? But whether they use IDF or not may not necessarily mean that the current Google uses it or not, okay? So my question is, are they using IDF? Yes, why are they using IDF? Okay. Who wants to disagree with that point? Or everybody agrees with that point? So imagine the following situation, where only one page in the entire corpus has the word Al-Qaeda, except it has it a million times. Is Al-Qaeda an important word or not? Extremely important. Okay, by reducing the frequency within a single file, you don't say anything about whether that particular word also appears in all the other files. IDF is about how common is it, not within the current file, but across all the files. So when they taper down the size, I mean, and you're not the only person who said it. Several people have actually written it on the blog. Okay. They're using IDF because, you know, as they go beyond 4096, they don't change the weights anymore, okay? But that only means, essentially, that the term frequency is being damped. IDF is being ignored completely. They just don't take it into account. Okay, now of course, did that make a difference or not, you know, is a different issue. But you can actually at least ask that question and answer it cleanly, because IDF is about the distribution of the term across files. And the example I gave you, this only one file in the entire world has the word Al-Qaeda in it. But it has a million, and you just reduced its importance. That may or may not be the right thing to do. Okay, I have a deal. I'm not a deal, I have an idea. Okay, I'll ask you, and then you can decide by show of hands. As far as I'm concerned, I can have the midterm either Thursday or on Tuesday afterwards. Okay, so either we can continue this discussion in the next class we meet. If enough of you want the exam to be next Tuesday, that's fine with me. Okay, but on the other hand, since I also said it's going to be on Thursday, and you change your life around, that Thursday is when you're going to take the exam, that's fine with me too. I had actual reason to have it on Thursday because I was going away to New York to see fall colors, but there are no fall colors, so I'm not going. So it doesn't matter to me, okay? So as by show of hands, how many people want the exam to be done on Tuesday rather than on Thursday? Okay, let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. How many would seriously want it to be on Thursday because they have irreconcilable conflicts with Tuesday? Okay, it's going to be Thursday, I'm sorry. Okay, I think it's reasonable, because if you have irreconcilable conflicts, and I already said the date is Thursday, it'll be on Thursday. So we will, however, continue this discussion on Tuesday before the next topic is started.